Welcome to Open Minds, the weekly sermon podcast from Christ Church Anglican Cathedral in Vancouver, Canada. Reflections provoking thought at the intersection of faith and culture.
It is my pleasure this morning to introduce our guest preacher. The Reverend Vivian Seegers is the first Indigenous woman ordained priest in this diocese and the priest in charge of urban Aboriginal ministry in Vancouver. Thanksgiving is a time for celebration and, of course, giving thanks. It's also a time for truth-telling and storytelling. So today we've given Vivian the very small topic of food security. And Vivian is here to preach on that topic and share with us a bit about her ministry as well. Please join me in welcoming Vivian to the pulpit.
Okay. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable unto you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Food security on Thanksgiving weekend. For urban Aboriginal ministry, we have four feasts a year, and one of them is Thanksgiving feast. We have annually. The other one is Easter and Christmas and Aboriginal Day. So those are four very important feasts. And Thanksgiving is a very important feast because we remember and acknowledge the generosity of our people, of our ancestors, when they welcomed the people off of the boat who came from over the other side of the world, who were very, very hungry. I think they had scurvy and had sores on them, and they were dying when they came off that boat. And so the native people went and got all the good, healthy food they can find and brought it to them to give them strength and heal. So the leper is a very unsightly person and is an outcast in our society. They lived on the outskirts of our towns and communities. They're not welcome in regular society. They lived in isolation. And they were unable to have a normal life. They would look at people who had relationships and who had careers, and they knew that they would never be a part of that. Lepers were very poor. They lived in filth. They had no resources or energy to take care of themselves or their environment. They were unable to have a normal life. People would cringe from them when they saw them. They were always unclean and had limbs that were not, if they were still on their bodies, didn't work. And more. So in urban Aboriginal ministry, we have been feeding people, helping people get clothing, and helping people get housing, as well as supporting people who want to get off the street, to be freed from their addictions. And we have a regular Friday event. We begin at 10 in the morning to 12 noon, where we have projects. So sometimes we'll make drums, other times we'll make regalia, or we'll make bath bombs, very, very popular that people like to have bath bombs because they help them with their aches and pains and wonderful event doing it together because of all the scents of the essential oils and things like that. So it's a real self-care project. We do whatever arises out of the community needs at this time from 10 till 12. From 12 till 1, we have a lunch, a light lunch, and then from 1 till 2, we have a prayer drum circle. So we drum and sing songs that are from usually over the mountains. Unless we have a West Coast person in our group, we usually don't sing West Coast songs. They have a different protocol than we do, so we don't want to do anything wrong. Usually they're Dene songs, Cree songs, Ojibwe songs, Mi'kmaq songs, all these prayer songs from our peoples, and we are learning. It's a reclaiming of our culture and a discovering of our old songs. So when we have people coming in, I can tell when food security is a serious matter when the kids come in. Sometimes they'll walk straight into the kitchen and look for food. They need it. They're desperate, and they need to eat. And no matter what we have, it doesn't matter if it was there for lunch. When I see that, I just take out the food and put it out there and let them eat as much as they need to. And this is usually about the last week before welfare. Sometimes they'll come in and they'll head straight for the corner where the toys are. Or they'll run to each other and say hello and start playing together. And that's usually during welfare week when their cupboards are full. We also, sometimes I'll get a call from a couple who's having a fight. They are ready to break up. So I just get together, put a box out and start filling up the box with food and go over for a home visit. And then their cupboards have food in them. And their desperation is lessened. And we sit and we have a talk and they feel better and they feel heard and they feel tended to. Their kids will have food that day. And they are sorry that they were short with each other and that they said unkind words to each other. And that day, they are relieved and happy. And their children know that their mom and dad's happy again. We used to have food that was donated to us by a large grocery store. And at first, there were Caucasian, Western people, European people who went to get the food and were picking it up and bringing it to us. And it was usually good food. Day-old bread and fruit and vegetables that were still edible. It didn't look good on the shelf, but it was still good to... And we were happy to have that resource to share. But then the people who were picking it up couldn't do that anymore. So we had to go. And So I would send native people to go to pick up this food, and slowly, week by week, the food was no longer the same. It was older, it was sometime it was quite moldy, and it became embarrassing to pass this food on to those who desperately needed it, so we just didn't go back. There was also a popular coffee place that used to donate coffee and the old sandwiches and cakes and cookies to us. And then when it was now Native people going to pick it up, they stopped giving us the coffee. And then they stopped giving us the sandwiches. And then usually we were only picking up cookies and cakes. And the last time I went to pick up the donations, it was thrown into a garbage bag, and it was all broken and crummy, crumbs of cookies and crumbs of cakes. And so we didn't go back there either. Native people are treated like lepers in Canadian society all across Canada. People cringe from us. And I've heard someone say to me, I want nothing to do with those disgusting and appalling people. We're not allowed to go renting a decent home. We're usually given the smallest rooms in the single room occupancies, the most broken down rooms, the ones which others refuse to take. So even in the Main and Hastings area, we are treated with the same marginalization. We have a hard time getting interviews for housing or for jobs, and so success in a career search or to find a better place to live and grow is almost impossible. There was there's this thing of refugee supporting the refugee families, and I saw how much support they would get, and so I asked someone how come we can't do this for First Nations family, and there's sort of that, you know, cringing again, and this, you know, the response that I got was that, well, you know, these refugee families, they have a chance to come here and they become part of society. They get careers and they are able to contribute to society. So it's not a waste, but it would be a waste because First Nations people are seen as just always going to be that way, and it's going to be never ending. I see us as also, you know, when we lived in our communities, we before all of this ecological devastation that's going on, we had plenty of fish and moose and caribou and bear and, you know, just so much food. And now, because of the arsenic and the mercury poisoning of our fish and our caribou, we are ecological refugees who are forced to come and live in the most poorest parts of the cities in Canada. With the Care and Share program, we're going to be able to provide more than good food. We will be providing dignity. We can show these families and these individuals who live in these single-room occupancies that they are important, that they matter, and that we care. The respect that and dignity they receive when the food is fresh, and you know it was laid out with real care and concern. This will allow real gratitude to grow. When you see the food all laid out here, you can see how much attention was put into it, and the abundance and the generosity of that comes from the heart of the people. And that is the same thing that you can show when you're not given moldy food, or you know, when the food is beautiful and fresh. Like the leper who saw that, you know, this healing was happening as he was walking, all we can do is respond in awe, you know. And when I walked in here this morning, I was just like in awe of what was laid out here, and I actually took pictures. I'm going to send it to my niece. I'm going to ask her if she can decorate something like this tomorrow. I don't think so, but we'll do the best we can. But, you know, that kind of awe at generosity that is just so huge. And all he could do, there's only one thing that he could do, was to just stop and turn around. And say loudly how grateful he was to Jesus. I'm Dene. My dad is Dene. My mom is Cree. And in our Dene community, we resist saying please and thank you. Please and thank you is associated with residential school. Please is something that you say when you desperately, desperately need something and you dare not ever ask for anything. And it's also, if you don't say it, you're going to get hit. And so please is, you know, I know you're not going to give it to me. I know that, you know, I'm not even supposed to ask, but I'm desperate to ask. And thank you is, wow, you know, I didn't expect you to give it to me. You know. And so we don't say it usually together. But one of the things that we do say is tahuna. And I didn't say that right. I'm going to try to say it. I'm just so nervous right now. Tahuna. That's how we say it. We say it, and it's sort of like said louder at the end. Tahuna. And the reason what that means is, you know, may you live long, the translation. You're so generous and you're so kind and caring that it's so important for the people that you stay here for a long, long time. That you live a long time, that you're around. So that's why we have, and we say it like, tahuna. That's it, I got it. The legacy of the residential school has left so many Native people in terrible states of poverty, mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual poverty. With the support of the Care and Share program, we can tend to these different forms of poverty. I can go and visit a young mom who was moved from foster home to foster home as a child, who's now trying to provide a home for her children, and she will see that she is loved. The love that we pour out with unlimited generosity, the love that we have received from God through Jesus, a love that is so abundant and so never-ending that we can pour this out to her. Jesus poured out his love day after day after day, right up to his death and then beyond death. Jesus showed us that there is no death that can overcome love and generosity and abundance, the abundance of God. The generous love that we have learned from Jesus, from God through Jesus, we are now able to share. We are healed when we can take that and walk with it. And when we see that healing happen inside us, we know where to get it. We know where we got it. And we know how to give it. And we know to go back to that place, to go back to where the healing happened. And it's where he was healed. And so we go back to people who need healing, and we share that healing. And again, we live loudly. Our actions say loudly. Each act of generosity says, we praise you, God. We praise you for all of that you have to offer. And the suffering around us, all that can happen is that they will respond. Tha huna, all my relations.
Thanks for listening to the Open Minds podcast. For more information on the Cathedral, its ministries, and how you can get involved, go to www.thecathedral.ca.